The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
Broadcasting from beautiful Burbank, California, we survived the fires and we're still here, though the heat is still rising. And I have a great guest for the Knapsack Files. Someone that, you know, it's been this theme in the last four or five Knapsack Files when I say it. This person I've been trying to get on for a while, but part of the reason I can't just grab him into the studio anytime is he's out there playing baseball professionally. And in case you didn't know, that takes a little bit out of you, takes a little bit out of your schedule. It is, well, he is a baseball player. He's an actor. He's an entertainer. He is a trivia expert and an anti-hero. It is Cody Decker.
How's it going, Ken?
Dude, it's great to have you here.
Oh, it's great to be here.
You know, I there's so many areas I want to start with you. So many areas I want to dig into your life, but I think I'm going to start simply with at what point did you realize you could hit a baseball better than me?
You know, I learned that at an extremely young age. Right. When I was my brother, who's 7 years older than me, he took me out. Am I allowed to cuss, by the way?
My mom never likes it, but I'm okay with it, Cody.
Okay, so my brother, when he's 7 years older than me, so when he wasn't beating the shit out of me,
yeah,
he was taking me outside to make me play baseball with him.
And right, right.
I think I think he was claiming it was being a good big brother, but I really think it was just like getting someone to play with him, like play catch with him.
Right.
It started with like playing catch, and for my first 2 years of playing baseball with him, I would hit every day. And then once I got to 4 years old, he wouldn't let me hit again until I got him out.
Okay.
And, you know, by the time T-ball came around, I literally hit a home run every at bat.
You were that kid.
It wasn't fair.
Yeah.
And so then the next year I skipped two levels and, you know, I'm playing with kids who were 2-3 years older than me and I'm better than them. And then I started going to, you know, probably around 6 or 7, I started going. I went to, when I was 7 years old, I went to Steve Garvey's All-Star Baseball Camp. And Steve Garvey was there. It was awesome. It was a baseball camp.
Man, I've eaten hot dogs behind Garvey at the Dodger Stadium Dugout Club restaurant. It's a thrill.
Yeah, I mean, his hair is still exactly the same. Hasn't moved since he was a Dodger.
Those forearms.
Man. I mean, the hairiest, most muscular forearms in the history of mankind. And I don't want to speak out of turn, but I'm pretty sure multiple paternity suits. I don't know that, but I think
that was pretty dramatic. Cindy Garvey had some problems with him in the mid-80s.
I mean, he was Steve Garvey.
Steve Garvey.
So, anyways, I went to this baseball camp for Steve Garvey, and I just killed it. I kind of studied it up, and I was kind of above the curve in guys my age. And then when I got to about 8 years old, I started training under Reggie Smith, who was Steve Garvey's teammate.
Yeah,
Reggie Smith became. I started working at his. He had a baseball academy,
right?
And I joined his baseball academy. I eventually started working there as a junior counselor.
Gotcha.
I worked out with Reggie every day. He basically became my baseball mentor for up until I was in college.
I love that because, yeah, Smith is a reference from, I'm a little bit older than you and your brother, but that's a reference from like my generation of coming up. Watch it.
I mean, Reggie is the man.
And he's
the man.
Outfielder, Dodgers, among other teams.
Dodgers, Giants, Red Sox. He's in the Red Sox Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Who else? The Tokyo Giants.
Did he go over there?
He went to Japan
to Japan.
Went played for the Tokyo
Probably
Giants.
Probably hit 72 bombs in 80 games.
He just raked because he's Reggie and he just rakes. By the way, for those of you who are not a baseball fan, raking is a term of someone who just hits the shit out of the ball all the time.
Yeah, no.
He raked.
He raked.
But no, Reggie, he was kind of my mentor growing up. And, you know, by the time I got to high school, I was playing on 5 teams at a time,
right?
You know, all club ball teams, pretty high intensity. I was playing every single day. I had hitting workouts every night. And the only thing that sucked when I got to high school is I was overweight. I was a fat kid.
Really?
Oh yeah. I looked, I was just,
you were like a Bob Hamlin.
Oh man. I was thinking more like
Steve Balboni.
Steve Balboni or like, you know, Babe Ruth towards the end of his career. I'm talking like the Boston Braves years.
The 12 games, yeah. The one homer.
The one where he homers and he can't run the bases. Yeah. He runs to first and someone rounds it for him.
It's like the saddest segment in Ken Burns baseball.
I looked like that. I looked really bad. And then that's when I started working out. My freshman year is when I started. I got a trainer. Mm. And my first like 2 months of high school, I dropped like 20 pounds. And all of a sudden, I was pretty strong, like stronger than I already was.
Right.
And by the time my freshman year comes around, I'm playing on the freshman team for the first part of the season, and I'm hitting 700.
Yeah.
And I'm just, and finally, my brother, believe it or not, was my freshman coach. He was my coach.
Oh, wow.
And he kept going to the head coach and like to the program. I was like, why is Cody still here? Like, seriously, he hasn't gotten out in like 3 weeks. So they moved
He's
me up.
He's tired from running the bases.
So. Yeah. So they moved me to varsity and I didn't play. I just, Bro, they're like, oh, he's a freshman. He's not going to play.
Right.
I'm like, you're wasting your time. So the next year I played.
Yeah.
And I led the state of California in home runs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at that point I was a lot stronger. I was working out. I became a workout fiend. I just loved it. And then my, junior year, I got to the point where I had like abs. I looked like that. And
I'm getting flush here, Cody.
No, but here's the problem. I went from 14 home runs to 3. I hit 3 home runs that season. But the reason I hit 3 was because I had intentionally walked 30 times. But I also But I blamed it on the shape I was in, so I immediately put 10 pounds back on, and my senior year I led the state of California again. It was a lot of fun.
You were intimidated at the home plate. Forget the stats. You just looked so beautiful. They were like, we can't pitch to this guy.
I don't know. I mean, it was well known at the time that like it was all over because I was in theater there in Santa Monica High School.
Right.
The theater in Santa Monica High School at the time was one of the most important things at Santa Monica High School. Like put on these huge productions back then.
And I got to mention some stars came out of there.
Tessa Thompson.
Yeah.
I was in Funny Girl with her.
Really?
Amber Tamblyn.
Yeah.
I mean, before that, you had the Charlie Sheens, Emilio Estevez's.
Brat Pack days.
Yeah. That's the entire Brat Pack. Rob Lowe.
Oh, wow.
Robert Downey Jr. they all came out of Sandlot. I met Robert Downey Jr. one time, and I told him because I was at UCLA, and he just got cast as Iron Man. And I had seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which I loved. Like it is my favorite Shane Black movie, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah, so
we're on the same page.
I saw him, and he was just walking into a movie theater. At the time, it was the AMC Avco. It's now the IPIC.
Yeah.
So I walk in. I see Robert Downey Jr. and I'm just like, I loved you in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Like, it's the greatest thing ever, and I'm so happy you're playing Iron Man. And he kind of shook my hand, and he's just like, thank you so much. I'm getting torn apart online for it. I'm like, no, it's so good.
It's so good.
It's so good. And then he's like, well, sit down with me. So I got to sit down with Robert Downey Jr. for like 5-10 minutes before my movie, and he's like, so tell me about you. I'm like, oh, I'm a baseball player at UCLA. And he's like, oh, who are you? Where'd you go to high school? Oh, Sam Ohio, same place you did. He's like, what year were you? I'm like, 05. He's like, well, I was almost class of 83.
Almost.
Oh, my God, you're awesome.
And then was on SNL 2 years later. Yeah, that's an interesting time in his career, too. Yeah, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, because, you know, it was, you know, remember, he was had so many problems.
He was out, man. No one wanted him.
I mean, his comeback was Ally McBeal, and then he blew that.
I know.
But then look where he's going.
And then Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and then
Testament to Hard Work.
Iron Man, and then Tropic Thunder, and just everything he's done. Love in between. It. The Soloist was a bit of a misstep, but what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
They can't all be winners.
Yeah, what are you going to do? So this is fascinating because I like a lot of, you know, young American kids, grew up wanting to play ball. I thought I'd be the catcher for the New York Yankees at one point. I had tried, couldn't hit a curveball, couldn't stop flinching when any fastball came at me.
I could barely hit a curveball now. Don't worry.
Don't worry about it, right? But I ended up coaching, and like what you're describing, I coached some little league teams, 15-4 in 1998, Cody. We took the AA division there in Arroyo Grande Little League. I could see the kids where it was like, you got this versus my chair keeps falling. I apologize. I've got to fix this. So I know what you're talking about. So it's an interesting point to realize this is something you could do. It's not just I got to pursue it at a higher level. And that's a commitment of its own. You mentioned the 5 club teams, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. It was.
It becomes work early.
You'd be surprised how much to get to that level.
Yeah, yeah.
Like just in high school alone, to get to the level I kind of gotten to.
Yeah.
I kind of foregoed like a normal life for
Absolutely.
A little bit, and at a very young age. You know, I either like my free time, I either went to the movies,
right,
or I played baseball. That was it. That was literally my entire life.
Mm.
And not that I regret any of this. I loved it.
Yeah,
my
yeah.
parents were never those parents, luckily.
The Little League parents?
No, they weren't the ones like, yeah, you got to get back out there. You got to do this. No, they were supportive. The only one time they were those parents. One time I was 10 years old.
Right.
And I flipped out. I finally flipped out because I was playing so much.
Yeah,
and I was playing on one team in particular that they would never play me.
Right.
They were this big club team. They were called the SoCal Angels, and they really saw themselves as
you know,
we are the pipeline to the major leagues. The kids are 11 and 12.
Right.
And I'm 10. I'm a 10-year-old on the team, and they would never play me. Literally would never play me. And so there was a tournament, and I look back, I'm like, I don't even know why my parents were even paying for this. I think I had a total of, I was with that team for 6 months. I think I had a total of playing with them every weekend. I think I had a total of maybe 25 at bats, maybe.
Right.
And I remember, one day I was at my buddy, Sam Howard's house, right next to Douglas Park in Santa Monica.
Sam,
good old Sam. He's a dick. I think. I don't know. I haven't seen him in 20 years. But I remember we were at his place, and we were really into, at the time, the Alien movies, and we wanted to watch Alien 3, which is a sentence I hear myself saying now, and I'm like, why did you want to do that? And my parents were like, hey, you got a game. We got to drive over to Valencia. I'm like, I'm not going. And like, you're going. You got to play. I'm like, I'm not going to play. I don't want to go. I hate this. I was miserable, and they kind of snapped that I had to go, and I finally just like, I kind of like fell to tears. I'm like, I just don't want to go. I hate this so much.
Yeah.
And I think they kind of took a step back, and I think that was the only time, and they probably were even way better and nicer about it than I even remember.
Right.
But I remember that was the one time where I felt like pressured that I had to go play baseball, and I didn't react well to it. I was a little kid. And it never happened again, ever.
But I mean, that's 10 years old, and good for them if they realized it there, because I've seen and we've heard so many of those tales.
I mean, what was it, Marinovich of the USC throwback?
Yeah, Todd Marinovich. Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
What it was. But luckily, my parents were very. But I mean, my baseball life going from that point on, was also fairly easy for them, I think, because I didn't. You know, I didn't have teams where I was like kicked to the curb anymore, and I always played really well, and so I kind of just I think it wasn't the travel sucked.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I went all over the place.
Right.
All the way from
those club teams.
Man, I was playing in Cooperstown, New York. When I was in high school, I was in Arizona playing in a tournament. I was in Texas. I was in Florida playing in a tournament. It was a lot of travel, and I can only imagine how much money they spent.
Well, and that's what's I think overlooked a lot of when you know to reach a professional level at any kind of sport is that kind of dedication starts very early. That's why you know foreign countries when they're gymnastic teams, their kids are abducted at 2. Leonard, do you think I want to get into your other interests because you theater. And everything, but I'm not going to just focus on this. You are not just a baseball player, Cody. You are so much to me.
I know, but I mean, on the surface, number one, I'm obviously it is my career, and it's been my life for 30 years.
And you're a baseball fan, though. Like, this wasn't something you're just like, well, I'm good at it. I've got to do it. You grew to love the sport.
No,
right?
I love actually as time has gone on.
Right.
I love. The actual game more, the game more now. I don't like to, I don't sit down and watch games as much as I used to because I just played 140. I'm going to kind of take a step back.
Yeah.
But one thing I think I really would like to manage one day.
Yeah.
Because I just love controlling the game and just like making the moves that you got to make. A double switch is my favorite thing in the world.
I
really like seeing things ahead of time. Well, three batters down, we got this, and we got this. They got a lefty who I know can't hit lefties, and we got this lefty warming up in the pen. If they pinch hit for him, we got this righty ready to go. There's something about the game itself that I really, really like. It's all the politics and bullshit of baseball that I despise.
Sure, it's within the industry, but...
Yeah, but it's no different than movie industry
or
probably any industry.
Right.
It's just the politics of baseball are not my favorite, but the game itself is so great.
It's so pure. I mean, you're reminding me what you're describing. I've talked about it before in the Knapsack Files. George Will's book, Bunts, which is a collection of his essays and stories on baseball, starts with a really – it's like a, you know, eight-page – story on all this strategy and moments and everything, and then it turns out it's a in between the pitch of the 1997 ALCS with the Indians and Orioles, and he's just describing all this and all that's happening inside one
and
pitch.
That's the thing. People on the outside who maybe don't know the intricacies of baseball, right. They see baseball as boring and slow.
Sure.
At every given moment, there is 30 things happening.
Right.
You know, all the way down just to what pitch is being called. There's a purpose. If you got a smart catcher, there is a purpose to that pitch.
Right.
Whether it's to get the guy out on that pitch or to set him up to get him out on the next pitch.
Right.
I'm thinking as a catcher now, I'm looking at it like, okay, this guy is very susceptible to breaking balls down in the dirt.
Right.
So I might try and show him a fastball up that I don't think he'll get to. He might foul it off, or he might even just not even swing.
Right.
Okay, but now I've changed his eye level, so now I'm going to drop this breaking ball a little further down that I'm going to have to get ready to go block.
Love it.
So now I have to be prepared. Now I'm calling a pitch that I'm prepared to go down and block, and when I go down and block, it's going to hurt like hell, but I got to do it. And this guy's hopefully going to chase, and I got to pick up the ball and tag him or get the ball to third base or first base, or I have to look around and see who's on base. So I got to, there's just so much happening.
You're speaking poetry.
I know. And I think the listeners of your show are hating me right now.
No, it's fascinating from all aspects.
There's just so much, so many things going on. And that's actually one of the things I like about it so much. If you have a brain in your head,
right.
And you would love baseball. Anyone would love baseball because it's more or less a spy game.
I was going to say, you know who would be a good manager is Peter Baelish.
Yeah.
Littlefinger would manage the hell out of baseball
games. He would be so good. And his interviews after games, just so cutting. Just like he would say something about a team. Well, you know the team, they swung it well, but tomorrow we have Kershaw and...
Chaos.
They don't know what to expect.
Chaos is a seventh inning pitching change. Oh, I love it. So we'll come back, I'm sure, to your career and what's going on and some fascinating stuff in that, I'm without a doubt. But going back to high school, it is the old thing. We're raised to think you got your art folks and you got your sports folks. And that's not always true. I always say it's the same muscle. Mm-hmm. And so here you are. You're also doing theater while you're traveling. You're not just playing on the weekends a couple innings. Your life is this, but you also find performing and entertaining.
This was actually interesting. So I get to Santa Monica High School. And Santa Monica High School, I don't know. I honestly don't even know what it's like now. But back then, Santa Monica High School, almost all the money generated around that school, like most schools that size, because that's a big school. You got like 4,000 students there.
Wow.
Usually you have like a football team that generates a ton of money.
Right,
and our football team did generate a lot of money, but nothing compared to our choir, orchestra, band, and theater.
That is really different.
Samohai was more or less like a ridiculous art school. We were ranked number one in the nation in orchestra, choir, band, and there are no theater rankings, but if there were, I'm pretty sure it'd be up there.
I'd love some theater rankings.
It's
certainly that makes sense for the area, SoCal, I get that, but that's still pretty big because it is sports generates money. That's part of the reason it's such a big industry. I get that. So that's different.
But it was, the arts in Santa Monica were just kind of next level. So you get to high school and the theater program there, it was borderline impossible to get into.
Right.
I kind of got lucky. Because what I did was I took an acting class. Remember, I was kind of heavy going in.
Sure.
So that did a number on me in middle school. I was extremely shy and kind of really self-conscious about just about anything.
Sure.
So I didn't want to talk. I didn't want to do anything. And the acting class, which was the theater director, a guy named Dr. Frank Ford, one of the smartest and craziest people I've ever met.
Dr. Ford.
Dr. Ford. He was running this acting class. And more or less, the acting classes were a combination of teaching you theory, mostly Stanislavski. Mm-hmm. We basically said, everyone pull out your Stanislavski books.
Yeah.
And then he would go on a political tirade for 25 minutes. And they were fascinating. So every day, his lectures were a combination of yelling at students,
mm-hmm.
and then a couple of, and then inverting it into a message by Stanislavski or
right.
somebody else. And I remember I got up the first time and I was terrible.
Yeah.
I was terrible. I was awful. But
do you remember what you did?
God, what was it? For the life of me, no.
Something
about a soldier coming home and like talking about burying his father and brother in the war. It was dreadful.
Were you singing the lyrics to Elton John's
I might have been.
Bury my father's gun.
I might have been. It was such shit.
Right.
But I remember afterwards he would critique you, and his critiques were not friendly. They were
sure.
they were brutal in front of every 40 people in the class, just
right.
crush you. But he said, "Was that your first time on stage?" And I said, "Well, not since I was a little kid, but yeah." He's like, "Okay, honestly, not as bad as you currently think it is."
Right.
I'm like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah, you seem nervous, but you're getting more comfortable, and you have you have a really good presence. So take that and learn from it." And he wrote down some more notes. He handed them to me.
Right.
So the next thing I went up there, I was just a little more calm. And I walked around like, I would walk into a room and my penis was in there for three minutes already. Just, I was like,
I got this.
I'm like, what a day.
Better than hitting a two-run double. I got it.
So like, I kind of grew a little confidence from that. And then I started doing it more. And then I came to the point where we only had to get on stage like three times a semester. I started getting on stage three times a week. Right. I would learn a new monologue and I'd do this and do that and try and keep getting better and better and learn the actual paperwork of breaking down a character and breaking down the lines. And
right.
I really liked the Stanislavski method. It was taking down, you know, the beats. You're taking down every line and you're getting to the deepest meaning of that line.
And how old were you around this time?
I was 14.
14.
And I was just, I was getting so into that,
right.
the bookwork of it.
Yeah.
I just was fascinated by that. And then I remember one day, we had to do a full-on one-act play, and it was. And so I grabbed two guys from the class, and we decided we're going to do. And I came. I really like Neil Simon's "Come Blow Your Horn."
Love this.
So I did. We did the entire first act of "Come Blow Your Horn,"
right.
which was 45 minutes long. We had to put this together in a week, and it was really funny, and it was really good. And I thought I sucked, but I remember walking out of it and. And right after it was done, we got a standing ovation from the class. And I'm like,
nice.
Well, that feels nice.
Yeah.
But then I look over at Doc, and he's just sitting there with his arms crossed, and his face has not changed one time. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah. What did I do?
I am about to get eviscerated.
Yeah.
And he just said, he just reached in his thing, and I'll remember this forever. He reached in his thing, and it was a script for Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And he said, he tossed it to me. We're doing Romeo and Juliet in the fall. Start learning Romeo.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, what? And I thought he was joking.
Yeah.
He wasn't. He was serious. And it turns out I was in the running for it until I went in and did some shitty auditions because Shakespeare I do not read Shakespeare well.
Yeah.
So he ended up casting me as Samson, and that was,
Even then, it's almost like a baseball turned drama version of the movie Cutting Edge, where suddenly you're like,
yes,
all you're of the sudden. Jock who's like, I don't want to be in your play. Romeo and Juliet, learn the lines, Cody. I love it.
So that was a blast. And then by the end of that year, we did another couple plays. I just had that sophomore year, just a couple of small roles, nothing big.
Yeah.
Then my junior year, but all the while I was still doing the acting classes and getting on stage three times, four times a week. And then
still playing.
Yeah, still playing. Right. And trust me, the rest of my grades were not doing good because I was playing so much and I was focusing so much on the acting stuff.
Right.
And then so my junior year comes around and we're doing Noises Off, which is one of my favorite plays.
Right.
And I got the part, exactly the part I wanted, which was Frederick Fellows. Have you ever seen Noises Off?
Yes. I think I've seen a film version of it.
Yes, there was a film version starring Michael Caine and Christopher Reeve.
Yes, I have seen that.
So the play is about actors putting on a play.
Correct.
In three acts. So the first act is you're watching the dress rehearsal literally 6 hours the night before the opening, and no one knows their lines. Everyone's horseshit. The director's sitting in the crowd with the actual audience. and like yelling at them about how bad this is. The whole stage is on wheels, so we flip it around and you see backstage of opening night.
Right.
So now you're seeing opening night. We're going on the other side of the stage performing this horrible play, and on the back everyone's trying to kill each other.
All the drama.
The play's a disaster, and then it flips back around, and you go to the next night of the same act of the play, and you're just seeing this play is such a disaster.
Such a disaster.
Now all the backstage shit is coming up on the stage. I got 2 concussions doing this play. knocked out on stage during the second act. And I had more fun doing this than anything in the world, because I had to be the character Frederick Fellows and his character that he's playing.
Right.
So I had this idea. I'm like, I want him to be like Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Frederick Fellows. I had this idea of, Peter O'Toole,
yeah.
Just this kind of high pitched British, like soft voice. And then the moment I'm playing Fred and wearing glasses, and the moment Frederick is about to go on stage, I would Superman it Christopher Reeve style and just take the glasses off. And next thing you know, I'm like this suave. Who was I going for? What's wrong with me? Judy. What's wrong with me?
I don't know. What's wrong?
Cary Grant.
Cary Grant. Yes. I was like,
So I had this idea of Peter O'Toole and Cary Grant in the same guy. So I thought that was going to be a lot of fun. And then I got knocked out on stage, which was great. And
how did you get knocked out?
It's a real physical comedy.
Yeah.
I had this scene where I had a part where I had a bucket stuck on my foot. And the stage was about 6 inches off the actual floor.
Okay.
So the stage that's on wheels, which is a huge erected set.
Right.
And there's an actual hard floor underneath it. So I would always get the bucket off, and I would land on my back, and I would take the fall. Like I was taking some serious wrestling bumps.
Yeah.
Like I was getting my ass kicked. I got hit in the head with a door, and he's like, you got to take some pratfalls. I'm like, it's not funny if it's pratfalls.
Yeah,
I got to just do
it. Do it.
So the door gets slammed in my face.
Yeah.
I wore it. Would land on my back. I just basically kicked the shit out of myself every one of these nights. And this one night, it was the very last performance, and I got this bucket off my head. I would jump and land on the hard floor on my back, square on my back.
Trying to take a bump.
Well, this one time, I slipped, and so my back landed on the stage, and the back of my head whiplashed and hit the hard floor.
Yeah.
I'm out cold. And the play's only halfway done. And I remember it was taped, and I have the tape somewhere. And look on everyone's face was just
Cody's dead.
They put their hands to their face. They thought I was dead. And all you could hear was me moaning, doing. I don't remember this, but I was just moaning like uncontrollably. But for some reason, it really worked for the play because everything's supposed to be going crazy right now.
Yeah.
And I got up and I just looked around. And I'm like, oh shit, we're only halfway done. All right. We got this. And then I just kept going, get everybody back on track. So then the next scene, I have this sheet over my face, and I would walk into a wall.
Yeah.
So I walk into a wall.
Finish the job.
Head first.
Yeah.
Down I go.
Twice?
On the ground, out cold again. But luckily, that's the end of the scene. The end of the act.
They drag your body off.
No. So I lied on the other side of the stage. I'm like, hey, we're about to turn the stage. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to lie.
I don't know, do we
need to stop playing? I'm like, no, just turn the stage. So the stage gets turned in front of the crowd, and it's just me lifeless on the floor.
And there's video footage of this?
Oh, yeah, it's the best.
We're just writing this show.
Oh, yeah, it's the best. It was literally the murder of a 17-year-old boy.
Promising young athlete. You get more hurt on stage than you did on the ball field.
That's kind of true.
Yeah.
I'm 10 years professionally. I've only been on the DL twice.
Yeah. And never knocked yourself out cold.
No concussions. No concussions there or in college.
But theater.
Theater, 2 in 1 night.
Dude, I get it. I was old gobo in a Shakespeare performance in high school, and I would have to, I hit a pole because it gets same thing. You got to do it. If you stop or you fake it, what are you here for?
Yeah, like
I respect your decision.
Like, I just, you know, I was thinking, everyone can watch pratfalls and put a thing. Yeah,
full commitment.
When I would watch The Rock take a chair shot to the head, and his hand was clearly blocking it.
Not good.
But when I saw Mick Foley take 15 in a row, I felt those,
and I'm sure Foley doesn't regret that now.
He's feeling them more.
Feeling
them
more now. Those knees, the thing that he just replaced. So here you are, and I get again. Santa Monica High School might be more of a different environment, but are you feeling any pressure to to go one direction? Was it? Did you know that baseball was the best bet to go professionally or try to, because that's a good secure job if you get it? What? How did that play out?
Oh, I would never say baseball's a secure job.
Well, but you know what I mean.
You know, I was getting so much. I was getting recruited so heavily from colleges, and I was getting so much talk about getting drafted high.
Yeah,
you know, and it just kind of theater just kind of became my outlet that I think away from baseball.
Right.
So I felt like I was. I really felt like I was getting kind of this full life.
Yeah.
And so you know, baseball was. I mean, it was still five. Not like, if I wasn't when I was in high school, then my life became. I was either. At the, you know, doing baseball, working out at theater, and I would stay in the theater till midnight some nights. So I'd worked out, I worked out 5 a.m. Throughout high school. That's when I got my workouts in. And then I would stay at theater till midnight, sometimes one, you know, because my senior year, especially, we did the Music Man, and I was the Music Man. I was Professor Harold Hill.
You're amazing.
And and it was a huge, if I actually have a DVD, I got to show you this DVD. It's absurd.
Yeah.
Just because of how big it was. You know, the theater was holds several thousand, not several thousand, like 4,000 people, 4,000 people.
I'm going to call 4,000 several.
Okay. Well, it would hold. It hold maybe it was 2,500. I don't know. It's a big. It's Barnum Hall. It's over.
It's 50 people, and there's a bench in the back for 10 more.
No one was there, and this play never happened.
Cody, you've been dreaming your life. You're still on stage, knocked out.
Yeah, it's St. Elsewhere, isn't it? This is all part of an autistic kid's dream.
So take me through this. You go to UCLA, and I get it. Here you are. You're hitting bombs in high school. You're doing good, and it's no longer just a dream. It's a reality of, hey, this is something I can pursue. Again, we all hit those points where I decided I need to be a funny kid, and I'm not going to take over for actually it was Joel Skinner was a Yankee catcher when I was coming up. So I get that point for me. But this is to realize that I'm trying to get into this mindset of I'm going to go to college. I'm going to play big time ball. Were you ready for that? Something you wanted at this point?
I wanted to get drafted out of high school, and I thought I was going to be. I was told I was going to go in like the fourth round, but I just She's agreed out. To go to UCLA. And you know, when you're in that position when the draft's coming up, it's almost like you have the college thing as a bargaining chip.
Yes,
that's how a lot of guys would use it, and that's kind of how. Now, I was fully mentally prepared to go to UCLA, but I was worried about one thing. I was so worried about studies.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that I wasn't going to do well in class. I knew I'd do fine in class. I was more worried of the schedule and how hard it was going to be. And spoiler alert, being a D1 athlete in a big college is not easy.
Yeah.
It's shockingly hard. Because there are serious consequences if you don't get your grades up.
Right.
You know, you're going to lose your playing time. You're going to lose your scholarship. You're going to a lot of things involved. Now, that being said, I loved it. I loved UCLA. But when I didn't get drafted, I was really disappointed. But I kind of got really quickly on the mental mindset. All right, you know, I'm about to go to one of the best universities in the world.
Right.
But okay.
What are you going to do?
What a terrible backup plan.
Yeah.
So I went to UCLA, and I was at first, I think, I was worried and nervous because I started second guessing myself. I'm like, I don't know. Am I really good enough to be here? Am I just fooling myself? Have I been this big fish in a small pond? So I go there, and I remember we started doing inner squads against ourselves, and we had this blue chip left-handed pitcher named Dave Huff. He's got a decent amount of big league time now. He played for the Yankees.
Yep.
Dave, good friend of mine. I played with him in the Kansas City organization. Dave was pitching, and my first at bat of the fall was against him. And Dave's supposed to go in the first round this year. Right. He ended up going in the first round. But the first pitch he gave me was a curveball that I hit into the trees.
Right.
And once that happened, I'm like, a whole weight was off my shoulders.
I'm
like, okay, you know what? These guys aren't better than me.
Right.
They're just not.
Right.
If they were better than me, they'd be in the big leagues. Let's go.
Yeah.
And so my freshman year, I didn't play much. I had 63 at bats, but I hit 5 home runs.
Yeah.
And I hit 300, and I had a good year. Yeah. When playoffs came around, we made it to playoffs. I started in all 3 games. And at the time, I'd only started in 7 games all season of the 56 games of the year. So they I think they finally started seeing something. I mean, the next year, I was the everyday first baseman, hit 14 home runs, which was the second most in the league
yeah.
in the Pac-10. at the time, Pac-10. Junior year, I had a down year. I was all Pac-10 the year before. And then my junior year comes around and the team is ranked number one
in the nation.
And now there's a ton of pressure, but we didn't feel it at first. The team was really together. By the time the season came around, we all despised each other. It was a nightmare. And we weren't playing well together. We weren't getting along. I don't think the coaching staff was getting along great, but you know, I honestly don't know. There was just so much pressure on this team being ranked number one. And it wasn't like we didn't have players. Like we had, I was just all Pac-10. Brandon Crawford was our shortstop.
Uh-huh.
We had a pitcher named Tim Murphy who had a cannon for a left arm. We had another pitcher named, Gavin Brooks, who ended up getting drafted by the Yankees, but the year before he was a freshman and he didn't give up a run the last month of the season. And like we were feeling really good about who we were. And out of nowhere, everyone kind of cracked and I completely cracked. Right. I went from, 14 home runs, 315 to hitting 225 with seven. And I ruined all my draft prospects. I was going in the fourth round and get paid a good amount. And now I'm getting calls in the 13th round by teams saying, hey, what would it take for you to go? And I'm like, I don't know, pay me $50,000. We're like, well, we're not going to give you that. I'm like, don't draft me. I'll go back my senior year.
Yeah.
So I didn't get drafted my junior year. I went back my senior year, and I kind of learned from it.
Yeah.
And we had a new hitting coach who he and I butted heads to the point where he wanted us to butt heads. He wanted me to he wanted me to wear his daily, beatings.
Uh-huh.
Like, this guy was a crazy person. He would come in and just scream nonstop, and I was the focal point of all the screaming. He told me that in one of our first conversations.
Right.
He's like, I need you to be tougher than you've ever been, because I am going to belittle you every day. And he's like, and eventually, and when it gets too much, I need you to come right back at me.
What J.K. Simmons character is this from some...
I'm not kidding. When I saw Whiplash, I'm like, I've seen this. I've seen this my senior year at UCLA. Seriously. It's 100% true. That's how we would motivate guys.
Not the beat, Cody!
Nope. Not my rhythm. So we would get into arguments all the time.
What was the psychology of that for him?
I think it was just... He wanted to be the, I think he, his idea, because the team underperformed the year before. I think he needed the team to band together against someone, and he was the someone that he needed everyone to band together against.
Wow.
We're going to play well in spite of him. And so that was his plan all along.
I'm going to intentionally be the guy you all hate to succeed. That is a not bad strategy, but
believe it or not, it worked. It really works. The guy is one of the most successful college coaches in the world. I don't want to say who it is, but you could probably Google who this was and figure it out. Hey, I love this guy to death to this day. I remember my first year of pro ball, he would still call me at 4 a.m. and yell at me about my stats the night before. He's like, what was that? You popped up twice. If you don't walk tomorrow, you cannot come back here and hit during the offseason. Like, what the hell? He was a crazy man, but I had a monster senior year. And I ended up, but when you're a senior in college, you don't get drafted high. You just don't.
Why is that? Just
because you don't have a bargaining chip.
Right.
If you're a junior, because you can't be drafted your freshman or sophomore year, but your junior year you can be. So when you get drafted your junior year, your bargaining chip is, well, I don't have to sign with you. I'll just go back to school.
Right.
I'm a senior. There's nowhere for me to go.
It's either this or the Chili.
So that basically, I signed for $1,000, which is standard.
Yeah.
For a senior sign, and the 22nd round, it came out to $638.43 after taxes.
Wow.
I remember, I don't know why the San Diego Padres did this, but I remember I was in Arizona playing in the Arizona League, the AZL, is where I started, and I remember the clubhouse manager was walking around handing people checks, and it was a lot of them was their signing bonus check.
Right, right.
And over there is the second rounder. He just got paid $2 million. He's literally handing him a check for $2
million.
I don't think the check was in there. I think it was already in his bank account, but I think he handed him the receipt.
Ceremonial
and then
check.
And then he hands me mine, and he just says, hey, signing bonus, pats me on the shoulder. I'm getting my ankle taped at the time because we got a game in a few minutes. He's like, hey, your signing bonus, don't spend it all in one place. And then I just go ahead and I open, and I see what it's like. He's sitting there over my shoulder. He's like, Yeah, it's going to be pretty fucking hard for you, though, huh? I'm like, yeah, thanks for reminding me. Hey, well, you're playing well. I'm like, yeah, cool. Seven years of that, which was rough, but a lot of fun.
Fun, sobering on one level, but like you said, fun. You're doing it, and you still are.
Yeah.
We know you are. Take me through that mindset now of being at a professional level, but... You know, I know you played with the Padres. Mm-hmm. Got a little time up there.
I did a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And where are you at now? I want to know mentally now because you were driven. I'm looking at you. I look at you drinking this little.
I've been on a cleanse.
You're looking ripped.
Working on it, man.
Yeah.
I really would like my abs back. I'm trying to get to a point.
So
would
your fiance?
Yeah, I think she. I got a wedding coming up. I got to look good. Well, at least as good as I can. Where was I at the time, or where am I at right now?
Right now, but here's the thing. So you hit it, you get up. I've seen your stats. I'm a baseball stat guy.
I mean, I don't mean to toot my own horn, but tip. Yeah. But I am currently the of active players the most. I have I'm the home run leader of active players in the minor leagues.
In the minor league.
I have 191 career home runs.
Which.
You know, is the only reason I like that. It's just like Crash Davis said in Bull Durham. It's a dubious honor. Any minor league record is a completely dubious honor.
Right.
But I do like that. It does kind of display longevity.
Yeah.
And most guys don't get out of their first year.
Yeah.
And I'm going into I just finished year 10.
Yeah.
Or 9 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've now played for like 6 different organizations and teams still, you know, give me jobs and still give me a borderline shot. Even if the shot is not as good as I'd like it to be.
Right.
It's good. I love it. I love playing baseball. I love being around baseball. So
now it's now become a correct me if I'm wrong, but almost like a second half of a dream. It's something you're right. You have 191 career minor league home runs. I have zero. Yeah. You know what I mean?
No, it's cool. It's and you know, I have like 10 major league at bats.
Yeah.
I don't have any hits, but I have an RBI.
Right.
You know, I only got one start. That was the tricky thing.
Yeah.
That was the thing that to this day still kind of bothers me about my big league call up. I have anything bad to say about the Padres at all. I'm forever thankful to them because they gave me they made it for me possible to say out loud and have it be true that I'm a Major League Baseball player.
Yeah,
I got to say that even if it was such a short time. But the only thing I didn't like was I didn't really play. I got up, I got up, and I got one start. All my at bats were pinch hit at bats. And I hadn't, at that point, I hadn't pinch hit in 2-3 years.
Yeah.
Pinch hitting's hard.
Yeah.
You're sitting there for 2.5 hours and I remember one at bat was, I hadn't had a bat in a week and a half. And I'll remember this for the rest of my life. My manager says, "Hey Decker, grab a bat." I'm like, okay, here's the problem. We're facing Madison Bumgarner of the Giants, who I've faced before.
Yeah.
But it's the 8th inning and he's got a no hitter. And I haven't and even before I grabbed my bat, he's like, "When was the last time you had an at bat?" "About a week ago." And he just pats me on the shoulder. "Hang with him, good luck." I'm like, "Great. I'm gonna have to go up to face Bumgarner this." And then the worst part was he got me on a 3-0 count. Now, in case you don't know this, anyone who's listening, 3-0 count, 3 balls, no strikes. It's kind of standard. Like, I don't feel comfortable swinging 3-0. Most guys don't. But when you're at it, like if I was in the minor leagues and I had a 3-0 count, I could swing 3-0. I have carte blanche to do that. Right. I'm a veteran guy. But this is my first 2 weeks in the big leagues.
Yeah.
I can't swing 3-0. I haven't earned that right to do that. So I'm sitting there.
I love and hate the little rules.
And I'm just sitting there going like, oh, God. I have to tell. So taking a pitch means you don't swing it. So I have to take this next pitch.
Yeah.
3-0. Okay. Taking 3-0. Strike, fastball, right, literally just right down the middle. I'm just step out. I'm like, I hate the world. I hate everything. And I get back in the box. I'm like, all right, just get ready. Throws me another fastball. that I fell off. And now I just went from in the driver's seat to against the wall.
Yeah.
I'm like, 3-2 against Bumgarner. And I've seen this, you know, I've faced him a couple times, especially in spring training.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple times in the minors. I'm like, all right, I have one hit off of him, but he's got that slider.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, 3-2. And I never do this. I never, ever sit an off speed pitch. Ever. I never do this. But I just sit there. I'm like, he's got that slider. He's got to throw me that slider. All right, just be ready for it. Be ready for it. Fastball. I'm a mile late. And I remember I was like, all right, get ready for that. And it was like, fuck. Son of a bitch. I go inside. I'm in the dugout. I'm just so mad at myself because I'm like, I'm not getting a whole lot of opportunities to get at bats. Yeah. And I feel like I threw that one away. Even though, you know, pinch hitting, when I say pinch hitting is hard, I mean, successful pinch hitters get. There are no successful pitchers.
There's like three. There's like Gates Brown, Greg Gross, and Willie Harris.
Yeah, Dave Hansen.
Dave Hansen. Like,
these are people you've never heard of, but they were extremely successful.
Yeah. Coming off the bench cold. It's in 95 mile per hour fastball.
Almeido signs.
Yes, like, there you go.
Like these are guys that, you know, they're I've heard even Mickey Hatcher.
Yeah,
Mickey Hatcher was called in the 88 Dodgers was called the stuntman.
Yeah,
he even had shirts made stuntman. He would, because after you get all the pretty people out there, you got to send the stuntman in at the end of the game to kind of finish the job.
Love Hatcher.
He's awesome. Yeah. And so it's a hard job, but if you've never trained for it, it's almost impossible to do. Especially now, my first time in the big leagues, and I'm trying to do this job that I've never done before.
Right,
and I'll always be disappointed that I didn't do better at it. I know it was a tough hand to be dealt, but I just, you know, I have often thought about it for like the last 2 years. I bounced around from organization to organization.
Right.
You know, I spent 7 years with the Padres, and the last 2 years I've been in now 5 organizations.
Right.
So a total of 6, and some are great and some I weren't as great.
Yeah.
But that's just for me and how I mixed with them. But I'm, you know, I always think back, like, if I just, you know, what if that line drive I hit down the line?
Right.
What if I just, you know, I was a tick late and I hit I broke my bat and it looped over the third baseman's head.
Right.
You know, just a little broken bat single. I would have been one for eight.
Right.
And then what if I, you know, hit a little number through the hole? I'd have been 2 for 9. Next thing you know, like, my career might be drastically different right now.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that sometimes keeps me up about this.
Is that what motivates you?
A little bit. Because I feel as though I belong up there. I definitely feel as though I deserve a chance. Like an actual chance.
Yeah. Baseball's full of that.
Yeah.
Full of those people. And that's I love this in a way.
So I keep playing for that real opportunity. Some, like, maybe I just haven't found the organization I'm just the fit for, that they just said, this is our guy. I don't think anyone's really kind of claimed me as their guy.
Right.
It's no one's job to claim me as their guy. I have to go out there and I got to perform. And sometimes I perform and sometimes I don't. You know, I'm a streaky hitter. Right. I, you know, sometimes my stuff plays, sometimes people don't think it does. But no one will know, and I'll never know unless someone gives me the chance to prove it.
Yeah.
You know, to really prove it. And give me 5 starts. Let me see what I got.
And you're working to make sure you're ready for that chance.
Like, you wouldn't believe.
What gets you up every morning then for that? Is it the base knock? Is it, you know, I know you got a wedding coming up. You got real life going on. I know that.
Well, I will say that, you know, all the motivations in the world are important, but it's... It is less important than real life. You know, I want to, you know, have a life, and but I love my job. I love playing, and I guess I don't know. It's almost a sickness at this point of, you know, trying to make sure, keep plugging away.
Yeah.
But I try and do different things, and I try to grow as a player and as a person if I can. And it's hard. But it's fun.
It's fun. I'm hearing your voice. You're excited about Noises Off, and you're excited about this. What is going to be in your brain? What's the first thought you can have when you get that base knock in the major league? Because I believe in my heart you will. So what's going to go through that head?
I have no idea. I honestly have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep trying until I get it.
Yeah.
I had a teammate named Clint Barmas.
Yeah.
Clint spent a lot of time in the big leagues.
Yeah.
He was my teammate in San Diego, and then we went and spent spring training together in Kansas City, and we went to AAA together in Omaha.
Yeah.
And I remember when we were sitting there, because I was the last. Oh God! After my time with the Padres, I go to the Royals, and I was the last guy cut at spring training.
Oh, really?
At the very last moment.
You would have been the 26th man, basically.
Oh, man.
They cut to 25 for those who don't know.
Everyone else knew where they were going except me. And I got a couple of winks that I made the team.
Oh, gotcha.
I don't think I was ever on their radar to make the team, but I had a great
spring,
like a great spring training.
Right.
And so after our last game, we're at Chase Stadium in Arizona. We're playing against the Diamondbacks. Mm. And everyone knows where they're going except for me. Mm. And we're playing this last game. And after the game, and I hit fourth during the game. It's a major league game, and I'm batting fourth.
Yeah, in a major league
for
stadium.
The team that just won the World Series.
Yep.
And I'm just like, man, maybe I did. And see, I got a couple of winks that maybe I did make this team from like coaching staff.
Yeah.
And I got called in the office after the game to Ned Yost, and he told me, "Listen, we're sending you to Omaha." And it sucked. But I'm like, oh, I was so close.
Yeah.
I was proud of myself for one thing is the team brought me in. I don't know how much I was really on their radar, and no matter what, I put myself.
I put myself in there.
Yeah. But I just fell short, and they traded me a few weeks later to the Rockies, which did not work out well for me, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I don't even remember my initial point. Oh, Clint Barmas. So I'm sitting there, and Barmy gets told he's going. They gave him his option because he's an old veteran. Old is the wrong way, but he's a veteran. He's spent a good amount of time in the major leagues.
Yeah.
And they kind of gave him this option. I think they said, listen, you're not going to make the club, but we would love to send you to AAA if you're willing to do it.
Right.
And he comes down into his locker, and he sits next to me, and he's just like, I'm going to go to AAA. I'm like, and Barmas has spent the last 10 years in the big leagues.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, it's not beneath me. It's baseball. Right. I'm going to make them rip this uniform off me.
Right.
And I'm like, you're fucking awesome.
Love it.
You were so cool.
Love it.
Yeah. He's just like, I'm going to go down. I'm going to bust my ass and try and get back. He ended up retiring a couple months later, but hearing this guy who had been in the big leagues for 10 years.
Right.
Look me in the eye and say, I'm going to make these guys rip this jersey off me. That's what it's going to take. He's like, I'm not done yet. And until they tell me that I can't play anymore, I'm going to play.
I love it.
And I'm like, you're the coolest man in the world. He bought me a suit too. It's a dark blood red suit. It's awesome.
Oh, that's just downright villain.
That guy's a
go out on your shield.
Dude, I look so good in it.
Go out. Sure you do.
Tailored to the gills. Loved it.
You haven't picked out your wedding suit yet, have you?
Oh, I did. It's normal. Jen put her foot right down. She's like, you ain't wearing the stupid shit you wear on the road. I'm like what? And she's like, no ascots, no bow ties. I'm like, oh, come on. I look great in an ascot. Yeah. She's like, oh, not at our wedding.
Few minutes left here. One day, just reality, either you're not going to be playing, you're going to have a good run here, whatever. You've got a lot of skills outside of baseball, clearly. Noise is off. Giving yourself concussions is a skill. Are you also how do you balance that? The off season, you come out here, you do some fun stuff.
I do, but you know, I still got to get a job and I got to make some money. I give a lot of hitting lessons to kids. I coach a team here and there. I go on commercial auditions, and I've been pretty lucky that I've always picked up a commercial every off season.
Yeah.
That's just pure luck, but sometimes it's cheating. They're like baseball commercials. It's like I was in a Head and Shoulders baseball commercial where I was just like a hitter on the Reds and I got paid like way more money than I deserved. I literally, you do not know I'm in this commercial unless I pause it, zoom in and circle it.
And then I'm like, you sure?
Yeah, and you still can't tell. It just looks like a guy in a jersey with a beard, and you can't tell anything, but it's me. And I made a lot of money off of that, and that was awesome. So I made more money off that at the time than I did playing baseball.
You made more money pretending to be a ball player.
Yeah, than I did being a ball player at the time. It was horse shit.
Hollywood.
But it was awesome. So I've always been kind of lucky in that. I'm lucky in friends, and I have a lot of interests, and I've been able to, get offers doing, you know, I've been able to do work in radio as and you know, host some shows. I've always hosted a trivia show in the off season. I kind of put together kind of a show that's a little different. It's like a bar trivia, but on like crack and steroids.
I mean, those are fun things.
It's something special. I don't even know if I'm going to do it this off season, but I don't know. It's always been odd jobs to kind of pay the bills during the off season. But, you know, I do occasionally go on auditions and, you know, I have some buddies who make actual movies who occasionally throw me, say, hey, would you like to be in this? Like I got my buddy had a TV show called State of Affairs on starring Katherine Heigl.
Yeah.
And he just said, I got a role for you. It's just a small little thing.
But,
and I'm like, all right. Yeah. I played a security guard. I got blown up.
Love it.
I had some lines, man, on NBC. Felt pretty good about it.
I love it.
I got a ton of interest and, you know, I can do something with this acting background if I can. And,
I absolutely believe in you now, and I'm curious about where you're going because I said I do believe. You know, we've crossed paths, we have mutual friends. The next thing you know, in front of me, and you got something there, and I can't wait to see you in the Schmodown.
Oh, I won't lose.
You won't. I honestly think
you won't lose. They're not going to put me in it. I would
100%.
I wouldn't.
Why? Because
I'm going to come in there. I'm going to let all their people with their gimmicks cut their promos, and I'm just going to be me laughing at them like, you're adorable. That was a sweet entrance. Now get ready to get boat raced on who knows more about DCEU. Trust me, it's me. Who knows more about Bond movies? Oh, trust me, it's me. I know more about George Lazenby's personal life than you do about any James Bond movie.
He grew his hair long, and they had to cut him. He became a hippie. but that's this is where your long minor league bus rides, these romantic minor league bus rides,
they're anything
are fueling you for your second
career. You have no idea. I mean, those are long movies. I sit there with my iPad. I watch TV shows. I watch movies.
Yeah.
I do some writing. That's my life. And I retain useless information. This is why I run the trivia show. I mean, if it'll help you in life, I probably don't know it. But if like, hey, Cody, I blew out a tire. Do you know how to change a tire? I'm like, no, but I could probably tell you quite a bit about the intricacies of the TV show Dexter.
Dexter or Changing Lanes with Ben Affleck and Morgan Freeman.
I hate that I know more about that movie than I do know about changing a tire.
Well, absolutely. I think we're going to have to see you in the Schmodown. It's going to happen.
Probably. I don't know. I proclaimed already that I'm going to come in and take all your titles and CM Punk this shit. And
love it.
And literally blow a kiss to Christian and run out of the stadium.
Run back.
I'm going to be in spring training holding four belts and making all your titles inert.
We'd love that. We'd love that. I'd love to see it personally. Well, Cody, you got a fun story, a great story, a different story. And also, I believe what's the making of an inspirational story, too. So let's keep it going and keep in touch. We're friends. But I want to come back. I want the exclusive. Forget ESPN SportsCenter. I want the exclusive post that first hit in the big league level.
Hey, man. I only have a few calls to make, so you're going to be high on that list.
Okay. Good. Guys, Cody, and you can be followed, of course, on Twitter, Decker6,
at Decker6, on Instagram, even though I don't really do much with it, Antihero Baseball, my YouTube channel.
Yeah, I was going to say YouTube.
I forgot. I'm actually kind of amazed. We did a whole interview, and I didn't talk about my films.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes here. Then you on YouTube, you have your Antihero.
Antihero Baseball is the page. I've made a couple of viral videos that I didn't really intend for them to go viral.
And yeah,
I've thrown a couple other just funny little things on there for fun, but like I got a lot of notoriety a few years ago because I pranked a teammate of mine named Jeff Rancourt. Jeff Rancourt was a guy who spent a lot of time at the big leagues, and bit the bullet and had to go back to the minor leagues, and he played with me.
Yeah.
And no one really told him what I'm like in the clubhouse, so I convinced him that one of my teammates was deaf for a month. And we got the guy on board with it. You know, he wasn't even doing an impression of a hearing impaired person. He just stayed quiet.
Yeah.
And Jeff Rancourt ate it up like you wouldn't believe. And I made a documentary about it. And that's how we were trying to figure out how to break the news to him because it had been going on for a month.
Wow.
Where he keeps going up to the guy over enunciating. This is a true story. We all forgot. I shit you not. This is what happened. We were playing in Tacoma, Washington, the AAA affiliate for the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah.
Bases loaded, nobody out. It's a tie game. We bring in this relief pitcher who's the guy pretending to be deaf. Right. He comes out to the mound and he strikes out the side.
Right.
Strikes out three straight guys, no runs given up, and we go in the dugout. We're going ape shit, high fives, just yelling like 12-year-olds. And then Jeff comes in, slams his glove down right in front of him, slaps him on the knee, throws two thumbs in his face, and over enunciates yelling, "Great job! Way to go!" And my pitching coach ran into the clubhouse. There's a hallway that goes into the clubhouse. Ran into the clubhouse, laughing so hard that he was on the ground. He fell to the ground. I thought he was having a heart attack. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I almost pissed myself laughing. And so the next day we're like, we got to end this. We got to do something.
Did enough's enough.
This is getting out of control because he did way more stupid things too. So we were trying to figure out how we're going to tell him. And we came up with this whole plan where we're going to like pretend the guy gets hit during batting practice in the head and we all gather around and all of a sudden he can hear. We wanted Jeff to think it was a miracle. And I'm like, he's not that stupid. Well, maybe he is, but maybe. I don't know. Let me just interview everybody on the team and like get stories about what has happened. And then let me edit together and let's play it for him.
Right.
And that's how we break
and that's
it.
How
to
you
him.
Do it. That's
and that's how we did it. And we recorded it, and that's actually the end of the movie. His reaction to watching this movie. Oh, and he's just like, everyone's losing it laughing. He's just like, is this for real? And he just turns to the kid and he's like, say something out loud right now.
A month. This is like a game. This is a course of a month.
It was so great.
Well, guys, that is on his Cody's YouTube channel. Check it out, Antihero Baseball, and follow him at Decker6. Tell him you want to see him in the movie Trivia Schmodown to take all those titles.
I am going to look.
Yeah.
Like, remember what Ultimo Dragon looked like?
Absolutely.
That's what I'm going to look like.
Absolutely. And you guys follow me at Ken Knapsack. Don't forget, Knapsack Files is on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, as they call it now, Podomatic, and Stitcher. We're on Patreon as well. You can support. Yeah, that's right. You can support me at patreon.com, the Knapsack Files. I'm going to have less whiskey. Actually, it was water. I don't know what's going on. But that is it. Cody, thanks for coming in. We'll see you more, I'm sure.
Ken, thanks for having me, man.
See you guys. That's the Knapsack Files. Bye.